Film sack needs your help. How you gonna give your help? I'm not gonna sing this whole thing. I just want you to go over to patreon.com/frogpants and throw a little money our way. If you like this content and you've been getting so much of it for free for so many years, you think to yourself, man, I'd really like to give back. I get that all the time. Well, here's a great way to do it. Go to patreon.com/frogpants and help us out today.
Look, Tim, I give up racing. You got to know that.
You didn't give up racing, Harry. You quit to avoid an investigation into Buddy's crash at Daytona.
Hey, I didn't avoid any goddamn investigation.
Well, anyway, I talked to NASCAR, and if you come back in, there won't be any investigation.
How the hell you sell them on that deal?
I'm a hell of a salesman.
I'm dropping the hammer. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 222 for Sunday, November
220 poo. 222.
2nd of November, 2014. I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me tonight, Brian. He knows a damn race driver when he sees one. Dunaway.
True story. My favorite part of our movie this week was when the gimpy old man, the black-faced car driver, had a foot race. Because that meant my suffering was over and I could finally go get some coffee from the kitchen. But there was some dick in there talking on a rotary phone because I was suddenly in the 90s and Goose is dead. Let me have the car, Cole.
Oh, my gosh. Blackface. That's awesome.
Wow.
It's always good when you can bring that up in context. Also with us, Randy, don't forget to get rental insurance. Jordan.
Yes. Yes. Aloha, Brian. Scott, Brian.
Hi.
As I sit here barely dressed, surrounded by coworkers, a couple of whom never actually say anything, I have to admit, I'm a little groggy and disconcerted, maybe a bit confused, but I know one thing with complete certainty. The three of you all want me to take your hands and to place them right here on my huge, enormous nose. I mean, look at the size of it. It's a gigantic nose. Here, let me force you to touch it.
Yeah. That's, we got to talk about that scene a little more.
Feel my teeth.
Don't remember it.
Finally,
with us, Brian, he destroyed both my cars, Ibit.
So, I'm sorry. I'm not going to be able to record Film Sack right now. I see I'm eating ice cream.
You're right.
So, you're just going to have to talk amongst yourselves for the next 90 minutes until I'm good and ready. Ah, ice cream headache.
Is it crunchy?
Oh, good Lord.
Wow.
My favorite was it was crunchy. A fact also that the move that was actually a thing that happened in real life.
What's that?
The movie. It was based on a real thing that happened in racing.
Hold on now. Okay, yeah, because the trickle. Is it trickle?
Yeah, Cole Trickle. I was going to make a trickle joke at the beginning, but I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go for a Harry Hog joke. But I said, no, I'm not going to do none of that.
Well, it's what's his name? I forgot. Dick Trickle was Dick the driver, right?
Well, he was a driver with that name. I don't think this movie does much except use his last name.
Some other guy, though.
There's a hodgepodge of NASCAR history in this movie where they kind of play the things that happen into this movie. Hey, what movie are you talking about anyway?
So wait, this is like the Spinal Tap of NASCAR?
It's not really. Okay. It's not really.
No, in fact, I talked to a couple of NASCAR people today about this movie.
And
he talked to a couple of people who know what NASCAR is.
I should take that. Yeah. I didn't talk to either of the Dale Earnhardts. One of them died, right? So I can't talk to him. Right. But I talked to somebody who's really into it. And he says this is the movie, and a couple of tweeters said this too. This is the movie that got them into NASCAR. But as soon as they got into NASCAR, they realized how little like actual NASCAR this movie is.
No one ever in the history of the world got into NASCAR because of Days of
Thunder. That's what these people are claiming. That's what they're claiming. And here's what I would add to that. I would say that it's like ER. It's fine until you go to medical school, and then it all falls apart, my guess is.
Right, because rubbing ain't racing. That's bullshit.
Hey, we got into a group of friends, and I really got into playing pool right after Color of Money.
Right.
There's something to that.
Well, yeah, but that's different.
But Color of Money didn't have like 55 balls on the table at any given time, and ridiculous rules where you're shooting right. with pool cues that are 10 feet
sure,
long.
Sure, but
and
look,
so on.
look. Here's how it could work. You're 14, let's say, because this one guy I talked to said he was 14. All you're right. 14. You see a movie that gets you all stoked about it, and now you're in for life. Oh, sure. Now you're in.
No. Yeah. Like as a spectator, as somebody sure. who hadn't watched. Sure. Like I promise you, there were tons of people who watched Top Gun and then suddenly were really into fighter jets and built models. And
I'll
stuff.
Bet if you. I'll bet there's some statistic somewhere that says enrollment in the Air Force went up after Top Gun. There's sure. how many? There always.
I wonder if the naming of the baby's Goose like shot through the roof after Top Gun.
You think?
You think that was the thing?
Iceman. You forget if little Iceman Jones Jr. Ooh, Iceman. Yeah. The movie is Days of Thunder, and I don't remember a damn thing about it. I've seen it.
Because there's nothing to remember.
I guess not.
Scott just watched it this morning. Does not remember a damn thing about
really
it.
Awesome. No, I remember what I saw this morning, but I don't remember seeing it the first time. I remember it being loud and really good sound, work in it.
Yeah, this is really good sound.
Holds up. I mean, Tony Scott's movies are sort of famous for that, but we'll let Scott Fletcher explain, and then we'll come back after that. Here it is.
Days of Thunder. Tom Cruise stars as a gifted but unproven stock car racer whose quick temper and rivalry with another driver threaten to put the brakes on his career.
That's one of my favorites he's ever done.
And this movie, like, short. You can't say enough about the sound of this movie. This is a movie that when you the first 10 minutes of the movie, you keep turning it down. The movie turns your volume back up for you.
Yeah, it gets real loud.
We got this. Don't worry about it. We're turning it back up.
There's something about Tony Scott movies, though, that hold up both in the sound department and visually for me. And they look great no matter when you watch them, no matter how many years have passed. There's a few weird little things like mullets and stuff. But for the most part, his cinematography is strong and holds up and looks good. But I don't think this story is very thick. I think it's pretty weak. And there are a lot of really good actors in it. Yeah, well, yes, much like his. You know what? Twice did we get to see somebody put their hand either voluntarily or forcefully on his crotch in this movie.
I think that's something he probably wrote into the script himself, right?
Maybe. Yeah, because he wrote this. He has writing credits on this, so yeah, totally possible.
There you go.
And it's weird how the first time...
And she touched my crotch.
The first time there's a woman being rapey with Tom Cruise, the second time Tom Cruise is the one being rapey, it's a reminder of how sexual assault can carry on from the generations, you know, like when somebody gets, when Tom Cruise gets sexually assaulted, he has to pay it forward.
It sure did feel a lot more offensive now than it did when I saw it the first time. But of course that was 1990. I think I was 20 and I just, you know, you're kind of not, you don't really think about that stuff, not in like big terms. And
it's so offensive that it makes you wonder if Tony Scott ever touched a woman in his life.
Like, oh man, speaking ill of the recently dead.
Now, you know what? Over 2 years since he killed himself.
Really? I was shocked. 2 years?
Before watching this movie, I said to myself, oh, Tony Scott, yeah, he died earlier this year. No. Over 2 years ago.
I feel like we just talked about it on the show.
I know.
Yeah, because we had seen some other one of his movies. I can't remember what. It wasn't Top Gun. It was something else. What was it? We've seen a few.
Oh, right. We've seen. Yeah.
No. We
Most
need,
sacked.
Yeah, he's close to it. He's not. He's up there. He's in the top 10 or at least. But anyway,
maybe it wasn't because we've definitely seen Top Gun. But I think
it was around Top Gun when he passed away. When we did
when we covered the movie, maybe right we did around, that because of it.
Right,
because
I think we talked about that when we were doing that episode.
You know what else? What else? We Beverly Hills Cop 2. We haven't watched it, but we talk about it all the time.
Right. And it's on the list too, isn't it? It's one of the ones that's coming up.
Oh, we've only done two. Okay. Here we go. Tony Scott. He is about 10th on the list, just behind Walter Hill. Nobody's even close to Richard Donner yet or John Carpenter, but Tony Scott, his movies are Top Gun and Days of Thunder. So, apparently it was around the time we did Top Gun is my guess.
Right. And I think it would be fun to watch, his A-Team. Yep. Right, he did the A-Team.
Yeah. Right.
I think it would be really fun to watch The Last Boy Scout, but that never is on streaming.
It's funny. I felt like we did. Did we not?
Nope. We talked about it.
Come up a lot. The Hunger would be a good one too.
Mm-hmm.
David Bowie. That's the David Bowie Natasha Kinski one, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I even think the newer one, his second to last one, The Taking of Pelham number, whatever the hell it was.
1, 2, 3, Pelham 653. Yeah, what is it?
That was That was lots of fun.
The hunger is not Natasha Kinski.
Oh, that's Cat People is Natasha Kinski.
Yeah, right. This is David Bowie and Susan Sarandon and Catherine Deneuve.
Now, hold on. Let's get this straight. You say Sarandon. I say Sarandon.
Mm-hmm. I say everybody else says Sarandon.
Is it just because,
and that's how it says to pronounce it in Wikipedia. Sarandon, like she's like cling wrap.
Oh,
right.
Sarandon wrap.
Really, is that how they like? And if they introduce her at the Oscars, they say Susan Sarandon.
That's what it says in Wikipedia.
Wow. All right, I've been saying it wrong all these things. I've been saying it wrong for years. Anyway, it is Days of Thunder, and it is Tony Scott who directed, and it is Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, Robert Duvall. Oh my gosh, the cast in this thing shocked me. Yeah. Randy Quaid is in it, of course. We've had a lot of Quaid lately.
You got John C. Reilly. So
yes,
he's great. Leading the Talladega Nights full circle.
Sure. Okay. He had a very small part, but I liked it. Michael Rooker is all up in this thing. Carrie Elwes, who is your princess.
Tiny role in this movie, really.
Yeah, he's like, your prince bride. How's that go? No, he's the prince.
Yeah.
And Miss Scott was in here. She was his wife. Tony Scott's wife was
right.
in this.
That's right. Was that his wife?
Yeah. Oh, Darlene, the cop lady,
she's
right?
A hottie. Oh my gosh. Right? I don't know if that's her. It says her last name is that. Her last name is Scott, but I don't know if they're married. Married?
She was married to him. Or either that or he was married to another Donna Scott.
Donna Scott as Darlene. Okay, we're going to look at it here just real quick here. She's really pretty. She is mini bio, really Tom Cruise, Robert Duvall. Oh, she later married director Tony Scott. You're right.
So it was after this film?
Right. Yeah, it doesn't say when. Interesting. She was born in 86.
Yeah, she married him in 1994.
Oh, which is 4 years after this
movie. And she was married to him all the way up until he died. So they stayed. Wasn't a quickie Hollywood marriage.
No.
Yay.
Can't find her birthday, but she's pretty.
Standing behind her in that scene playing a state trooper, pulling him over and threatening him is... the second dumbest actor in Hollywood, Nick Searcy.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Did you notice that? I was hoping you'd notice that, Brian, because he popped out and went, "All right, we're going to turn you in for smuggling booze or whatever."
I didn't realize that was him. I don't know why I didn't recognize him. It's funny because we had Margot Martindale too. It was on the stopwatch the whole time.
Yep. She was in this. Her first movie, by the way, she would about 6 months later be in that Rocketeer movie. But this would have been officially her debut in film.
Wow.
So there's that. Wow, Donna Scott is a total babe. I'm just saying.
She's not bad. She's not bad.
Beautiful. She's not just not bad. Look at her now, even. Wow. Anyway, good
Donna
job there.
Donna Scott. I don't, that rings no bells for me.
Well, it rang one for Tony.
That's ringing one for Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
She's really pretty. All right, what else we got? So I was just surprised at the cast, and some of them were people nobody knew yet. Not, like John C. Reilly, his car hadn't come in yet, so he was just a dude, but he was great in this. The role reminded me of something you might have put Philip Seymour Hoffman in before everyone realized he was like an acting genius. So like Twister and stuff, like, we need a dumb guy driving the van. Hire that dude over there. He looks like a dumb fat guy.
Also starring Cary Elwes.
Right, yeah.
Oh, really? Is he in that?
Yeah, he's in Twister. He's the bad guy in Twister.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
There's a wait, hold on. There's a bad guy in Twister?
Yes.
Yeah, you mean besides the tornadoes?
He runs the competing storm.
Oh, right. They did have
I feel like we're never going to get to do Twister, so I have to invoke a trope in Twister to explain it. Like every movie about something really niche, like skydiving. In the setting of the movie, everybody is into doing this thing. And in Twister, everybody is into chasing tornadoes. Mm-hmm. And so there's a good team of tornado chasers, and there's an asshole team of tornado chasers.
Yeah.
And Cary Elwes is the leader of the jerks.
Yeah. Well, in this one, he was that. You didn't know it yet, but he was going to be that. And you all thought, I thought, that Merle over there was going to play the bad dude the whole time. But then that was a trope. Look at this one. This is one of my favorite tropes ever. This is bitter rivals start hanging out, and then one of them is taken out of the game. So it's things like Footloose and the rivalry between the bully and him, and now they're best pals, and he teaches them how to dance. And
you got pals, huh?
And you got to dig into that trope, though, man, because it's bitter rivals plus the trope of baby men acting like baby men.
Yeah, in wheelchairs.
Oh, my God.
Footloose is a good example. Iceman and Maverick from the other movie we just talked about. Rocky and Apollo Creed are totally those guys. I can't think of
who was that guy in Color of Money? Who's that?
Let's bring it back to Color of Money.
Let's see. I mean, is it? It would be Paul Newman, right? I mean, he doesn't really.
No, Newman's the person who teaches, right?
He's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
He doesn't really join forces. I mean, he's the Newman is the Robert Duvall of
right. Color who's the primary guy he goes against in the Color of Money? He's got to be some kind of
classy
jerk, right?
It's been a while.
No, I mean, it seems like his biggest opponent in the Color of Money is himself. Like, there's no
right.
There's no, you know, the only really bad guy is the guy who hustles Paul Newman, who's Forrest Whitaker. And he's not even really a bad guy. He's just a...
That's who it is. Forrest Whitaker. He's the guy because he's not really a bad guy.
But he doesn't join forces with him or anything.
Does he? They don't fight crime together?
Wait. Does he sleep with a dude then? Is that what happens?
What?
No, I'm getting movies confused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, the crying game, sure.
That's hilarious, dude.
The Color of Crying. That's not crying.
That's it.
This movie has multiple layers of bad guys.
Yeah,
it's got your Randy Quaid, who is the head of NASCAR.
He's your financial. And, yeah.
He's not the head.
Sorry, he's not the head of NASCAR. Sorry, Fred Thompson's the head of NASCAR.
Right.
Another layer of bad guy.
There's so much as rub paint.
I love Fred Thompson.
Early on in the movie, you kind of feel like, oh, actually, Rowdy's like the good guy, and Tom Cruise is the bad guy as he first comes in
on his motorcycle, Top Gun style. Across the tarmac.
Yeah. What do you think about calling this movie a sort of sequel to Top Gun?
Oh, absolutely.
It's pretty close. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's a retelling of the same story.
Right.
It's obviously more of a privatized experience. It's not the military or whatever, and it's not nearly as big, I think, in its scope, but it's the same stuff. He comes in. He's the young rascal who's, you know.
Well, it's not just, you know, Top Gun, but everything Tom Cruise did in the 80s and early 90s was this.
Yeah.
You know, it was he's the maverick fighter pilot, pun intended.
Here's the description. Tom Cruise controls an extremely fast piece of machinery, deals with a crisis about two-thirds of the way in, following a traumatic accident involving a friend, only to come out at the end and win the heart of his higher-class love interest with a power ballad soundtrack.
And she's super, like, a professional and...
taller than him.
And independent.
And falling for him makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
If you eliminate the high-powered piece of machinery, then you've got Color for Money and you've got Cocktail.
Oh, Cocktail. I forgot about Cocktail.
Oh, don't worry.
Yeah, he's a cocky, loses the girl because he's too arrogant, has to figure himself out before he can get the girl back.
Yeah.
There's your rival. Actually, that's kind of the reverse, right? Cocktail was Brian Brown was the buddy at the beginning and then turns into the rival.
You know what would be fun? Let's do this, Brian. You just brought up a really good point, and it reminded me of something you always say on TMS, which is Taco Bell is a seven same ingredients
same
remixed
ingredients
every time.
Just in a different order.
Yeah, we got to figure out what Tom Cruise's seven ingredients are. And how you can mix and match them. Man.
Ingredient number one is a shouting scene where he's basically saying, "I'm the best damn option you've got," kind of thing.
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm. That's in there. Yep. And we could do an infographic and everything.
Loses the girl.
Yeah, we could illustrate this. Brian and I could put together
going into whatever situation his character is going into. He's really dumb about it. He doesn't understand or know. He's just talented.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just talented. He somehow, without trying, manages to be the best person at whatever this thing is. Mm-hmm. Shaking cocktail shakers. Nine ball.
Yeah. I was shocked. This movie has a scene where the character says, "I don't know what you're talking about." Like, I was like, wait, don't admit you're stupid. Like,
no, I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but tell me if this doesn't sound like a typical Tom Cruise stuff. You're reading through the trivia, and there's always a reference in every one of his movies where it says, Tom Cruise wanted to drive his own car stunts. Tom Cruise wanted to do his own swing from the building stunt. Tom Cruise wanted to fly his own jet plane, but they wouldn't let him because of insurance reasons. Like, that's also one of these ingredients, that Tom Cruise is somehow so into the role and so daring that he's going to be inside the F-16 taking on the freaking Russian MiGs. You know what I mean?
And then, correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember Brian De Palma talking about filming Mission Impossible, and Tom Cruise is hanging off a cliff.
Oh, that's right.
And he's like, there I was filming Tom Cruise hanging off a cliff, thinking this is the stupidest thing I've ever done.
I thought that was the second one. No, He's only on Cliffs in the second one, I think. Yeah, and two.
Yeah, in John the beginning, because he was on vacation.
Just swap De Palma for Woo. Mm-hmm. Got a Woo De Palma swap.
Okay.
And so, same deal, though. Yeah, it's the same thing.
High, you go low.
He right? demanded.
John Woo said it. Yeah, this is the stupidest thing ever.
And that's right. And he demanded to do it. He's like, I want to hang from that cliff and kill myself, right. please. Thank
Tom
you.
Tom Cruise wanted to bang Nicole Kidman, so he put her in this film.
Well, I mean, and there's another one that literally says that, Brian. It says, reputedly, Tom Cruise handpicked Nicole Kidman to be his love interest in the film after seeing her in Dead Calm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, aren't you the freaking? Isn't he just to walk around the garden and pick whatever fruit he wants?
He's the prince of acting.
And he did that with what's your face too, right?
Who? Katie Holmes.
Katie Holmes. Yes. What did he do? Where did he pick her? Did he pick her?
We picked her. He actually. What did he do? There was a story behind.
I thought he had his Scientology people pick her for him.
That's right.
isn't that the story?
No, that may be true. That may actually be true.
You know what? You can say what you want to about Tom Cruise. I give Tom Cruise a hard time. One of my most hated films is Minority Report, starring more than Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. And but you got to admit, the man has enthusiasm for life and movie making.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. He really does.
And you know, if I had 1/10 of his charisma,
he's got it in spades. And he's a handsome dude. He makes that mullet look good.
Looks at you through his eyebrows.
That tooth is center just tooth. Right. And when he's all, in Dunaway's words, blackfaced toward the end of the movie.
His teeth, he is
grinning as he's coming into the pit stop, and all I can see is that bright white center tooth.
Mommy, how I love you!
I truly believe the Tom Cruise pose where he puts his chin down isn't because he learned boxing as a teenager. It's because he's trying to hide his tooth.
Yeah, probably.
Interesting.
I mean, why not? That thing's right in the damn center, dude. Why wouldn't you want to hide it? There's an article here I just found. Katie Holmes wasn't Church of Scientology's first choice to be Tom Cruise's wife. They had bigger ideas. The person they were going to pick was Nazanin Boudadani.
Well, let's see what she looks like. I mean, she's not as good looking as Katie Holmes.
It sounds like an IMDb trivia thing.
It sounds fake. But
Katie Holmes wasn't Tom Cruise's first pick.
It is the dailynews.com. That may be a problem.
Oh, there we go.
That explains a lot. anyway, who knows? But there's some interesting other bits of trivia here. For example, this is Tom Cruise I'm speaking of, received a speeding ticket for doing 85 and a 55 while working on the movie. I like it when things of an ironic nature happen when you're making a movie about racing. Go ahead and get a ticket. That's great.
Right. This is going to work in my favor.
Yeah, that's right. It says the scene where Cody and Rowdy race rental cars on the beach. It shows birds scattering out of the way. Here's my favorite part of that trivia. The birds were lured to the beach by birdseed on purpose by the production crew. And in the first take, most were killed.
Nice. And what it doesn't tell you is the time that Sean Connery came on stage and he was doing his umbrella thing and he kept shooing him off.
Yeah, going to doing that thing he does.
Right.
Wait, what is that from? Is that from Indiana Jones?
We call the dog Indiana.
The
third Indiana Jones movie. He's trying to get birds to fly in front of the airplane to make it crash.
What a great moment for him it must have been to do that, to run
this thing. Do you think Cruise still holds the record for the most money earned from one movie?
I don't know if he does anymore. I think Robert Downey Jr. beat that, didn't he, for Iron Man 3?
Because I'm thinking of Mission Impossible 2, where Cruise took a bunch of back-end profit and somehow earned like $100 million or something.
Let's see. We're going to find out real quick. Biggest paycheck for a movie.
Biggest paycheck for a movie actor.
Yeah, and here they are. I found the list, and they go like this. Oh, my gosh. One of them is Jim Carrey. And
He did huge.
Bruce Almighty or something. Here.
Liar.
Jack Nicholson in Batman, the original, 1989. He made $60 million for that. Good Lord. Harrison Ford for the skull, the crystal skull piece of garbage, $65 million. Let's see. Tom Hanks for Forrest Gump did 70. That was all. Now, this part of this is upfront and then residual, right?
Yeah,
like stuff later. Right. But it's still, the, you know, whatever the contract is. Sandra Bullock from The Net. You know her from The Net.
But that's not what she got it for.
She got it for Gravity for $77
million. Seriously?
Yeah, we're really working our way up
there. She earned $77 million from Gravity?
How much is the back end? Because this was
a recent movie though. Come on. I mean, and she was pretty much the only thing in the movie. I mean, it was pretty much just her.
She did 25 million on top and the rest later as residuals. So still pretty high, though.
Wow.
Will Smith got 20 to begin with, and then part of his contract was residuals. He ended up with 100 million for Men in Black 3.
Yeah.
Fifth, look at these. This is very interesting. Oh, here you go, Brian. We're getting right into your territory here. Tom Cruise, War of the Worlds, 2005, $100
million. $100
million. He had some sweet deal on that. And I like that movie. I don't care what people say.
I've never seen that movie.
You haven't? It's good. I won't say it's good. Now, it was good when I saw it.
You're never going to guess number four. Bruce Willis for The Sixth Sense in 99. Wow. $120 million with the deal.
How? I want to know how, like, every now and then you name a movie where there's no way they could have known it was going to make that much money.
Here's how it went. Thing. Instead of his usual $20 million fee, which is all you do, is just $20 million and you're out for the big guys, it gave him a basic fee of $14 million plus 17% of the movie's profits. That movie was not expected to make that much money. It earned a massive $672.8 million at the U.S. box office. And he got
good on you, Bruce Willis. Way to believe in
it was a total bet. Like, that thing was kind of small and indie.
If you're Bruce Willis, you make that wager on a dozen movies and one of them hits.
Yeah. Now, this one's going to make you want to poo into a pile and then poke at it with a stick and then tear your eyebrows off. Johnny Depp for Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, 2003 to 2011. So it's all of them.
$185 million. It does count. I guess it's a franchise.
Not as a movie.
Not a single movie,
it's a
though.
Bunch of movie.
Okay, here's well, they did it again for two. Keanu Reeves for the Matrix franchise, $262 million.
That is all kinds
and
of.
You know what he'd say? He'd say, "Whoa."
And Keanu Reeves is notorious for giving away his money. So.
Oh really?
Yeah. Well, he's really generous. Supposedly, he's the nicest freaking guy ever and rides on the subway and like shakes your hand and hangs out.
Yeah, supposedly he took a huge chunk of money that he made on the first Matrix movie and just gave it to the people who made the movie.
Oh, wow.
Hold on. Dunaway, what'd you say he gives you? What'd you say?
He gives you Ebola. That's right.
I thought you said a blowy.
How you doing?
He said he gives you a blowy on the subway.
Gives you a blowy on the train. Gives you a blowy. That's right.
All right. Final number one. Here's number one. Drum roll. Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible franchise. $290 million.
I believe it, man. That was making some serious change back in the day.
So the answer is yes. Tom Cruise is at the top of that list right now.
And he was in there twice.
Yeah. Well, he's a rich man. Short man, but a rich man. All right.
He's a short man, but a rich man.
Let's see what else. There's some other stuff here. When Cole tells Harry, when it comes to the car, I'll take your word. He is actually referring to a line from a deleted scene, which never got heard. So it's kind of confusing. Like, why would you say that? When it referred to this line, which was, I'll take your word for what a car can do, but I'm not taking anybody's word for what I can do. The line can still be heard in the trailer, but is not in the film.
It still made sense, though. I mean,
It worked. Yeah. It
worked. There were several things that didn't make perfect sense because clearly things were edited out. Mm. Like there's a big deal scene about tires and Robert Duvall saying, you're going to do it your way, then you're going to do it my way. And he starts to explain what his way is and never actually explains
it. That was retarded because he's like, he says, okay, the cars you race, the open wheel cars, they're half as heavy with twice the size of wheels. And these are just the opposite. Now race like I said.
Yeah.
He never actually explains it.
Yeah. And he also had placebo tires. I like that. That was a nice thing. Amazing what that can do for a driver. Just tell them that the tires are weird and then that's enough.
Yeah, we got the special match set for you here.
Yeah. These tires are weird. Good luck. Hey, I feel like I can take on the world.
I don't know a lot about NASCAR, but I roll my eyes lots of times during this movie because I'm like, I'm pretty sure when you come across a wreck where there's a smoke filling the whole thing, you don't speed up. You may continue to go at the same speed so people don't rear end you, but I'm pretty sure you don't speed up.
Well, that was my other question. And I was hoping since you're in the South that maybe you had a little more experience with this, but all that ramming, is that a thing people just do?
Rubbing is racing, not like, no.
Well, that's what Robert Duvall
told me. Not like
this.
Yeah. I mean, right. There's very gentle nudging, but I mean, this is like.
It's almost demolition derby with how much they're like sliding each other into the wall and stuff like that.
But that rubbing idea is a real thing.
Every time you see somebody go high, you know that Cruise is going to get ran into the wall. I mean, that was just every time. It's like, they know.
Because my NASCAR experience literally is like, Talladega Nights and then some video games I played once, and I know nothing else. Oh, it's huge.
It's big. It's big here, man, because I mean, we got people who don't do anything. It's like, oh, the race is on. You don't even talk to me right
now. Yeah, it's like football in Texas or freaking baseball in San Francisco last week. Like, there's nothing. Right. You can't even function without it. And so I get that. I just thought, well, that seems like a weird, cheaty thing. It's kind of like, I guess in boxing, when you do kind of hug the guy sometimes to rest or whatever, mm-hmm. you're not supposed to do that. Or it's like,
yeah, there's a ton of protocol to prevent drivers from doing exactly what's depicted in this movie.
Yeah. That was my question. It did seem like they were,
and
yeah.
there's all sorts of penalties that can be applied, and they just don't, I mean, it ultimately, it's so not in your best interests to be rubbing so much that you start damaging everybody's car. And
yeah.
But it is called rubbing. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, don't rub your rear end
too
hard.
They did a lot of, they was really kind of in the bed, really pretty good with NASCAR on this. I mean, they had a lot of drivers, you know, talking. By the way, worst idea in the world to interview drivers.
Yeah. You know what that reminded me of? It reminded me of Over the Top.
Yep.
When they get to the end scene of the championship.
And they're all like regular arm wrestlers, except right. the two actors who sound totally different than everybody else. That was awesome.
Exactly.
Did you come across the Richard Petty quote?
Yeah, I might have. I think I got the guy after him because he made me laugh hard. I don't know if that was
Petty. I mean about the movie.
Oh, no. What did
he say? Someone asked the real Richard Petty what he thought of the movie Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
And he just said, well, other than the fact that it has cars and they were shown going fast, that's about it.
Oh, really? That's that's not.
Well, but it makes sense because, you know, I've watched boxing. I've watched it before. And Rocky is much more exciting, way more exciting, makes much more compelling movie.
Yeah. Or ask my mom what she thinks of the net. She probably had a good time.
Right.
But
right.
we all know that stuff was garbage. Like, I feel like it's like watching ER and you're a doctor. Just kind of you walk away and go, well, that's dumb. But everybody else who has no idea, like I watch it and I go, sure, all that looks like stuff that you
close
do.
Enough.
Yeah.
For me, the biggest unforgivable was when they first go to build the car, right? He's convinced Robert Duvall to build him a car. And so they show Robert Duvall walking around this ugly ass frame
bad frame.
And over. And then suddenly it's a finished car that's a completely different shape.
It doesn't it looks look like anything, a pickle.
That was a total like yada, yada, yada moment, too.
Yeah, right. Like,
yeah. We have a template. We have a big metal bar that's the shape of a car we put on there. Oh, and then the car's done, by the way.
It had some pretty sweet mood lighting, though, for building cars, I thought.
Especially more than 20 years ago, stock cars were still stock cars. Mm-hmm. You were supposed to take an existing model and change it as little as possible in terms
of...
And
they even talked about that in the movie.
Yeah.
And he was constantly... And Robert Duvall was going, I'm going to do this and this, and I'm going to do this. And I'm going
to
make
it. He was
totally
talking
different.
To it, too. He was talking to the car.
That's not a stock car, man.
Hey, baby.
Right?
I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna put out some. I'm gonna put this thing on you. Make you whatever. You know, it's like it's really weird.
Yeah, that was weird. I didn't like any of that. Here's one for you. They sure did that trope at the top with the old man farmer who's given up his life as a top coach of the freaking car people, and he's decided to be a farmer and work on his on his field all the time. And they had him go back there at one point, and then brought him back out again. And that bring that dude out of retirement trope. Went really fast in this movie. Like that's usually a longer haul, and this one was like, all right, I'll go with you, Randy Quaid. Why not?
Yeah.
Let's talk about my coon dog for a minute.
They actually do it twice. He retires again, and then Tom Cruise has to go get him out of the barn.
Yeah. Once Remember? Again. Yeah. And then somebody said, who was it? I think Merle said, so you aren't buried under 40 pounds of horse manure or whatever. I love the talk. Like the talk is great. The talk is great. That stuff always does me good. He is Tom Cruise is a quiet barfer. I wanted to point that out. He just went in there and went and came out, and he was fine. Now was that? I assume that's what he was really doing because he's eating the gum after and all that stuff. Like remember that whole scene? They're checking on Merle and Merle's.
Oh yeah, and he steps out of the room and then comes back in
because he's convinced that he's got the same problem he does. Like same kind of, which is kind of dumb. They're in two different cars. You don't get the exact same injuries necessarily.
No, I was in the same accident, so I must have exactly the same problem.
We're
that was so funny how they played that through, and they got to the hospital at the same time. They left the hospital at the same time. Mm-hmm. It was like matching injuries. They were soulmates.
Yeah,
they had the little same race. Doctor, the only woman in the world who has to fall for the lead.
Yeah, why didn't he die though? Because that's the trope where the trope didn't work. Is
right. Yeah,
because it's right before the last race. he's going to give up. This is the other Tom Cruise ingredient. Yeah. He's about to give up, but he's going to do it this one last time just for his fallen comrade.
Yeah, like a half cup of that in our recipe is what you need. Exactly.
I guess that makes sense because he couldn't have really driven the dead guy's car because it would have been no motivation to get him other guy back to the truck. I don't know. No. It was stupid.
Hey,
it
remind was. Me, how is who is Harold Faltermeyer and why is he famous? Real
he's
quick.
He's the do, 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 Axel F. for Beverly Hills Cop.
He was supposed to do this theme or this score, and they ended up passing it off to fellow.
I would have loved to have that.
Yeah.
they gave it to Hans Zimmer.
Well, I think he also did the music for, didn't he do it for Top Gun, the score stuff?
Yes, the anthem, that joom joom.
Yes.
That was him. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. He's also the Miami Vice guy, I think, isn't he?
Same name? It's Jan Hammer.
Oh, Jan. Yeah, Jan, whatever.
No, so, Jan.
Is it Jan?
No, that's Jan.
Don't argue with me.
All right, fine. You've got the make of the man. But no, they passed it off to Hans Zimmer, who now is like, you know, prolific and huge and everybody loves him. But this did not sound like a Hans Zimmer track to me at all. Like none of it did.
Oh, really? I felt like it did. It felt just, I don't know. I don't want to say boring because I think his stuff is really exciting in it, but it fits.
No, you can say boring.
It fits a very, very specific. This is what this movie needs to sound like. You know, it's like, all right, here's the action scene. Here's the finding himself scene.
Here's some of it. Like, okay, so this is how it starts out. I mean, this may as well be a Dolly Parton movie, as far as I can tell.
Kind of, yeah.
So let me skip ahead. All right, so that's. That's weird for him.
And in the composition, it said, and the music swells.
Yeah.
And then they said again, and the music swells.
But as opposed to, say, Inception or freaking Batman or the Call of Duty games he scored or any of those things, it's so different to me. Like, I don't know if that's just because he was new then. Like, 90 was, like, early days for him, and he just didn't kind of have a sound yet. But if you go listen to, like, Inception,
this was
dude.
Really early for Hans Zimmer.
Yeah. I mean, I love his new stuff. He's freaking amazing.
Whenever we say Hans Zimmer, I always picture, for some reason, Die Hard, and I'm always like, the bad guy in Die Hard. And it's like, no, that's not right.
That's funny, because when I see Cary Elwes, I think of the president from Independence Day. I get those two guys mixed up all the time.
You and, like, and me, we'll get the orchestra involved. It'll be great. Come to California, Hans.
Yeah. What was that,
like, looking at my score collection, I can't point at a Hans Zimmer score before 1990.
Hans Zimmer he's a little bit of a knockoff.
Where he starts really going nuts around 95 with Crimson Tide. That's what that
thing. Oh, yeah. Another Tony Scott.
He probably
movie.
Things started to get a little bit, you know, each thing he was doing sounded unique. Like Dark Knight, I'm looking through his list right here. That's a great soundtrack.
Sure. Yeah.
But Scott, I'll bet you would find
Iron Man.
Black Hawk Down's real good too, by the way.
I'll bet you would find some Hans Zimmer that you didn't recognize in Cool Runnings, in Radio Flyer.
Oh, good lord. In Cool Runnings, really?
He scored Thelma and Louise.
Actually, actually, close your eyes, picture John Candy, and you'll hear this. Oh, that sounds about right. Well, okay.
It's funny, his first credit is 1982 for Moonlighting.
Mm. No, really?
Yeah. Some walk by night, some fly by day.
Make me miss that show. I like that. I have some nostalgia for that show.
By the way, Harold Faltermeyer,
yeah,
like that music you were just playing, he did Fletch.
No, really?
And it sounds just like Fletch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Well,
does.
Except that
Days
was
Thunder music.
Yeah. Well, that's Hans Zimmer, though. So you're saying Hans Zimmer, because Hans Zimmer kind of sounds like other people, and in some of his work, you're like, oh, he was brought on to sound like so and so. Now finally able to have his own sound, I think.
And maybe that's it. Maybe when they couldn't get Harold Faltermeyer, because who knows what Harold Faltermeyer was busy doing at the time, they said, could you kind of give us a little Harold Faltermeyer action here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen to the Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack. Give us something like that.
It's funny because he co-wrote, oh, crap. Was it? Now I got to make sure I don't say this wrong. Oh, I know what it was. He co-wrote and did the main theme for that HBO miniseries, The Pacific. And it is one of the coolest intro songs of ever to all time. It's really, really something special. Somehow he's connected to the dude who does all of the Game of Thrones scoring, including the main theme. And now he's doing the Warcraft movie. And then this just gives me an opportunity to say they should have got with Russell Brower. All right, moving on. I just wanted to get all the way around to that. All right. I still have some,
that was your end game.
I still have some anger about that. All right, let's see what else. Nobody should wear a white pantsuit to a racetrack.
Yeah. Agreed.
Especially when you're so filthy constantly.
Well, yeah, because she walked in there with that thing on all cotton and white, and I'm thinking, you're going to have to go hug on greasy Tom Cruise now, who looks like a total mess. They're not going to be able to dry clean that out of there. What do you think?
Did you notice they were, I mean, it was funny because even when it was supposed to be at the beginning of a race, they were always filthy, completely filthy every time they were in the car.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even when they, right before you got in.
It was like right. before was starting clean. Any race, they had the ceremonial mud wrestling.
Just rubby.
Well,
grease.
He's got to walk behind all those other cars to get to his car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Jeez, man. That's why I might need to.
They're all puking out fumes.
Check some pollution.
So give me a triple alert there.
I can give you one right here.
So as I said, Nicole Kidman plays the trope of the only woman in the world in this movie. And that makes it even more egregious when she's dressed funny or when, you know, her accent is like never explained, because she's really the only woman in the world. Like they bring out a stripper of some kind at one point. But man, like
cop stripper, you mean?
Yeah, cop stripper at one point. But
you think she was a cop who stripped or a stripper who copped?
I'd wonder that myself. And I'm also wondering if it was all just a setup. Where'd they get a police car? Worst police people ever.
Yeah,
they let that happen.
Here's a question for the four of us. If the four of us were given some money, like let's say $500, could we come up with a convincing cop car and costumes and everything and pull somebody over?
$500 each?
I don't know. I'm just coming up with a budget.
Let's say that we had to do something for Randy's birthday, and we thought let's do the thing we saw in Days of Thunder. I don't think for $500. I think it's very difficult and illegal to try and get.
That's a good point.
Try and get a fake police car that's going to be convincing. That's
true, but I think they were actual cops and they were his friends, and he was pulling a joke.
I think it was a little bit of a mingle in between. Yeah, just hiring the stripper part was probably the. Getting her copper uniform was probably.
I think that was it. I think that was what we were supposed to think. I think Nick Searcy was supposed to be an actual cop.
But they just knew.
And not just a giant dick.
Right.
look, he's a giant dick.
You know what I hate about him? This is what I hate about that guy. I don't hate him so much because he's such a douche. I hate him because I really, really like him on Justified.
Yeah. You want to be able to like him in real life. And he just says things that make him so unlikable in real life.
Yeah. Or, I feel the same way about Adam Baldwin when he plays Jane and other characters.
That's who I was referring to when I called Nick Searcy the second dumbest actor in Hollywood.
Yeah. They're both just, they're both crazy. But when they're doing their job.
Maybe you should go to the gym, fatty.
He's such an ass. Anyway, I captured him. We'll hear him later.
Very good.
Hey, Mellow Yellow got a big product placement in this movie. I may be regional or something, but when I grew up, Mellow Yellow was the single lowest rung of the soda totem pole you could buy.
No, not around here.
Oh, really? Like below Shasta?
Yeah, below Shasta, if you can believe it. Wow. Maybe not below like Dr. Thunder or whatever Walmart stuff came, but Mellow Yellow in the day, like when I was a teenager, that was like if you bought that, you were lame.
Mountain Dew and Mellow Yellow still holds pretty strong here in the South.
Sun Drop too, which is same thing, right?
Sun Drop.
Well, Mellow doesn't even have that.
We like all those piss looking drinks. It looks like piss. Sign us up.
Urine, it's for us.
So put that on your sign. Welcome to South Carolina. We like pee drinks.
If it looks like piss, we drink it.
So, but like Mountain Dew, top of the food chain here, loved it. Everybody does, but for whatever reason, Mellow Yellow just had a bad rep, and nobody. If you were caught drinking that, you were treated like underclass
poor people.
Basically
what do you got over there, Mellow Yellow?
So it was hard. I mean, even today, seeing that today, I just went, oh, you can't quite squeeze this little piece of prejudice out of me, because I still see Mellow Yellow and go, low rent, lame. And in fact, I started to assign a story element to it, thinking to myself, well, that's all that Randy Quaid could get the deal for, because they hadn't proved themselves. Cruz hadn't won any races yet. They got to settle for the Mellow Yellow deal.
When actually they probably just went and took some pictures of actual stock cars like that. Those are just actual stock cars in an actual race.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure. I'm sure. But do you think they probably got money, though, right? Or someone did on some side of that deal. Wouldn't you think?
There's some trivia about some of these cars where Cole's car was like from a 1989 race or something. So I'm sure they had.
Is it the Hardy's
one? It was plenty of crossover.
The Hardee's car, that made me hungry because we don't have Hardee's anymore. Yeah. All we got is Carl's Jr. who bought them.
It's the same thing.
No, it's not. Carl's Jr. puts dirt clods in your salad.
Gosh, you blaspheme. Yeah. It is not the same thing.
It's not even close. Same Hardee's thing. Was great. I used to eat Hardee's and just freaking loved it. And when they where they still exist in this country, apparently.
We have is Hardee's. We don't have a Carl's Jr. All we have is Hardee's.
Oh, and you don't like them down there?
We have our little town I live in has two red lights and a Hardee's. That's all we have, okay?
That is a sad state of affairs, man, right there. But they make a good mushroom in Swiss. That's all my point I wanted to make there. Right. At least they did when I last
time. I used to like the ribeye steak sandwich they had at the Carl's Jr. back in, like 2000
or
something.
I like their breakfasts.
I've never had one.
Whoa, Carl's Jr. I do everything I can to avoid that restaurant.
This was like 15 years ago.
I was going to say, I don't think they still do. Because the only one that's near me is part of a gas station. But they used to have
glass. Yep.
It is glass.
They had an egg McMuffin knockoff.
Yeah. Well, of course they did. And they have commercials where they make lots of vagina references for no reason.
You know who's the low rent for me around here is Burger King. They have nothing.
I love Burger King.
But Burger King has just gone downhill for years and years.
Really?
I've questioned whether or not this is actually me getting older or Burger King getting worse, because I remember loving Burger King in the early 90s. Loving
Burger King. We even had a name for it, the BK Lounge. I mean, it was hip. It was Lounge. Hip.
Drive down there in your garbage truck, right?
But hold on, though. Like, it's weird. Maybe it's, who knows how the franchises work, but here, they're on the up, and Wendy's is in the toilet. Just
Wendy's is all class, man. You can hardly afford to eat there.
Shut up.
It's true. It's a true story.
It's terrible here. It is so bad here. Nobody wants to go there here. And I don't know why.
We got the good Wendy's here. They serve a little bit of everything.
I always run into this, though. I'll talk to people from just different parts of the country, and they're all saying very different things about certain franchises. So.
Absolutely.
It extends to like the Walmart Target thing, or Kmart Target thing, where in certain parts of the country, Target isn't like, the cleaner of the two. It's not the more welcoming and nicer, well lit that Walmart actually is.
Lit.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Who lit this thing? The director of Days of Thunder? It's all dark and crap.
I was going to say that. I noticed that this felt like it was filmed through a shade filter. Like the whole movie feels like it's filmed through a shade filter.
They totally were. This was very popular during this time. It's very evident. I mean, it's almost like a painting.
Bruckheimer movies are all like this. Every Bruckheimer movie you've ever seen. They all have these scenes like this. And oddly enough, lots of Tony Scott movies happen to be Bruckheimer productions. And he's just got a feel for that. But I like his style. I think it's great. I miss it. You get a little bit of it with Michael Bay, and there's a few other people that kind of do it. His brother doesn't even really do it. Like Ridley Scott's style is very different, and I'm sad.
Kind of sexy? Animal crackers on Liz Tyler's lip.
I knew this was going to come up.
Saccharin packs on Nicole Kidman's.
Low on Nicole Kidman's thigh. Oh, are you kidding? I'd take that way over animal crackers.
Oh my gosh, you guys are blowing my mind. That's basically the same scene, isn't it?
It really is.
It didn't occur to me at the time. I didn't even think about it.
Both cases, a mentally handicapped person explains to an attractive woman something that she probably already knows. And she just goes along with, "Oh, you're so sexy."
This is wouldn't have race cars. Props.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't have Hot Wheels been more sensical in this area?
They would have been.
See, to fully, manage the parallels between the two, Ben Affleck would have had to use the animal crackers to say, "Okay, well, here's my rocket. It's a little rhinoceros, and the asteroid is this, this oatmeal cookie." And then,
he didn't have the right stuff.
He didn't have the right stuff.
It's a space movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Let me explain drafting to you. Hi, yes, I'm a doctor. I went to college.
Yeah.
I realize you dropped out in middle school. Like, you don't need to explain drafting
to her. She was totally pandering to him. It's all right. Yeah, we can go ahead. You can explain it.
It's because she's still living out that trope of she falls for him no matter what, and it's inexplicable why she gives two shits for this guy.
We don't have automobiles in Australia.
He's a bad guy. You know what I mean?
I do like that they said just keep your accent. I like that. There's no need to cover those
I think she toned it down considerably.
Really?
That was Nicole Kidman light for sure.
Oh, right.
Kidman light.
I like it. She's all plastic now, by the way. Just all plastic.
Really?
Yeah, it's fine. Whatever. You make your choices. You do what you got to do. But I like the natural beauty of the growing old. on both the man and the woman side. Like, I hope we don't see Tom Cruise with some tux and stuff.
Unfortunately, it's a world where you have to pander to the young if you want to be in the movie industry. So
we live in an ageist time, Brian.
Yeah, we've always lived in ageist time.
All right, let's do clips. Clips, everyone. Ooh, clips.
Clippings.
I have some clips. They begin with this one where old man McGillicuddy is talking to his car.
I'm going to give you an engine. Low to the ground. Extra big oil pans will cut the wind from underneath you. It'll give you 30 to 40 more horsepower. I'm going to give you a fuel line that will hold an extra gallon of gas. I'm going to shave half an inch off you and shape you like a bullet.
Jeez.
And when we get you prime painted and weighed, you'll be ready to go out on that racetrack.
Ugh. And I hope nobody from NASCAR is listening because he's totally breaking every rule.
Right?
Well, he's like a magician giving away tricks.
Right. Yeah. Get that, you jackass.
And then actually my thumb is going to operate this little lever right here.
That's right.
And they were all running Chevy Luminas. Remember Chevy Lumina?
Yeah.
And
that doesn't exist the pace anymore,
car.
Right?
Luminas are still allowed, I think.
Really?
Are they still a car? I think so. I could be wrong about
it's
that.
Weird time.
I might be thinking of the Impala, which had a huge resurgence. It actually sells pretty well now, but the Lumia? Lumina?
Lumina?
Lumina is a phone. Lumina is a car. All right, here's Randy. You know, is this Randy Quaid? Yeah, Randy Quaid yelling.
I want you to build me a car.
All right, great. Thanks, buddy.
Now I want you to make an oil pan close to the ground.
So get a little more horsepower.
Extra gallon in the fuel line.
Other than THX and maybe MASH, the movie, has Robert Duvall ever played anyone else but this thing he plays? It's the same character, and I love it too. Don't get me wrong. This is me making a compliment, but it is the one guy. Like, that is the...
Yeah.
This is the dude what he plays. Go see Open Range. Go see anything.
Falling Down.
Yep.
Falling Down. So good in that. I love hearing him talk. I could just listen to him talk.
I could too. Yeah. He's fantastic.
You know, every now and then you catch wind of some, like, old member of your family getting together with, like, a high school class that they graduated from 75 years earlier, and you get that remarkable picture before they all die in their late 90s. When Scott Johnson and Randy Jordan get together at age 93 and 95 for the last time we'll ever see each other, we're going to sit down and watch Open Range together.
All right. Because you still haven't seen that, have you?
I have.
Oh, you have? Well, I love that movie. You're saying it's because we'll enjoy it. Yeah, yeah. That movie is amazing. Oh, my gosh. Have we said that enough on this show? Let's say it one more time. That movie is amazing.
I've never seen it.
It's fantastic.
Like 50 plus years from now, Scott Johnson.
Every time y'all mention it, I think you're talking about the cartoon.
Brian, listen, have you ever wanted to see Kevin Costner shoot Dumbledore in the head? Well, I got a movie for you.
Wow. Okay. You got me.
All right. We got another one here. Some wisdom from Randy Quaid about Californians.
If you're from California, you're not a Yankee. You're not really anything.
Oh, well, hell bailed.
It's not really anything.
It's not very nice.
It's not
Californian.
Sounds about
is
right.
That nothing?
California.
49er, right? Is that
funny? Is pretty much everybody involved in making that movie was from California.
Yeah,
totally.
Here's another.
I think that was the joke.
Here's the horse manure one.
You ain't buried in horse manure after all.
I'm going to keep that one handy just in case. Let's see. Rubbing is racing.
No, he didn't slam it. He didn't bump you. He didn't nudge you. He rubbed you. And rubbing's son is racing.
Okay, hold on now. If.
Racing.
But Tom Cruise is a racer. He should have known that.
I was a big racer when I was 14.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't really. He was one of them
it's
fake
so
racers.
He's coming over from Formula One or IndyCar or whatever.
Open wheel, they said.
Sure, whatever. He's coming like he wouldn't know the terminology. Like he wouldn't know anything. Like he like everybody that races IndyCars never watches NASCAR at all. They don't even know what it is.
Because he's fish out of water. He's from somewhere else. He doesn't know how we talk down here about rubbing.
Put loose. Yeah. Everybody cut.
pretty much. All right, here's I don't know what this one is.
We end up looking like a monkey f***ing a football out there.
Oh, yeah, that one.
That's actually my favorite line.
The PG-13
F-bomb. Easily my favorite line in the whole movie. And they give it to Randy Quaid.
That's right. There was side boob in this movie too.
Yeah,
a lot of it.
Tom Cruise had a lot of side boob.
Well, no.
So the one complimentary F bomb we just heard.
Yeah.
A little side boob, but it's not really much of a even PG-13 movie.
I put it squarely in PG area.
Yeah, like
without the F bomb and without her side boob, I think you're in PG town.
Like PG for me is like age 7 to 13.
Sure.
I would watch this with an 8-year-old. I would feel sorry for the 8-year-old, but yeah. I'd watch it. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I might have to yell when he goes.
We end up looking like a monkey f***ing a football out there.
That's some good Randy Quaid. All right.
That is some really visual, good visuals. I can actually see that
actually,
monkey.
Actually, yeah, totally. That is what makes it.
I can see that monkey.
I can see that monkey right now.
Here's Nick Searcy doing his thing.
All right, everybody out and up against the wall here. You're under arrest. Let's go.
All right, that's the first. Now, there's more, and this is where you can really hear it, Brian.
Right there in your hand. Transportation of illegal alcohol across state lines for the purpose of distribution.
Raylan, I want you to get up in that holler. Yep. Perfect. Here's the senator guy. We love him. What's his name again? Howard Thompson. Fred Thompson.
Fred Thompson.
Fred Thompson. Yeah. Fred Thompson.
Would you call him Ted?
I said Jack Thompson.
Oh, that's even better. That's the anti-video game man. All right, here you go. Here's something about a greasy spot.
If you want to turn yourselves into a greasy spot on a country road somewhere, go right ahead.
Somewheres. Love it. That guy's great.
Yeah.
When he ran for office, line. I know, whatever. Politics aside, I'd vote for that guy just because he's Fred Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
Here's another one.
I don't give a shit.
Oh, that's a keeper. That's a
yeah, that's a good one.
Permanent spot on the soundboard.
Hey, Fred, did you? I'm sorry about you losing the election.
I don't give a shit.
All right, great.
Hey, Fred, Tom Cruise is making another movie.
I don't give a shit.
You're right. We've got a winner here.
Yeah, that's right.
Every once in a while. Yeah. Hey, Fred Thompson, Justin Bieber is the most popular kid in America.
I don't give a shit.
All right.
That is so fun.
Pretty much works with anything. All right. How about this one? Do anything weird on my leg? Oh, what? Oh.
You're not going to do anything weird on my leg, are you, Cole?
Ugh, bruh, don't talk.
What?
That was before she did the sugar thing.
That was the saccharine part, right? That was the part where she...
Oh.
She said, don't do anything weird on my leg.
Nope, this is powdered cream.
Not till we get married in the Scientology place. Then you can do weird things on my leg.
I don't give a shit.
All right, next one. Here's angry acting Quaid. All right, here you go.
He's destroyed both my cars. He's destroyed both my cars.
Oh my gosh.
You're fired.
Clark.
He's fired.
Clark, they broke both my cars. Clark.
Calm down.
Here are the big threes of rednecks, I like to call this list, coming up. Here you go.
We'll bring out the moonshine, start telling lies, and calling up the women.
There you go. I don't know what any of that meant. All right, how you done it?
Done it deliberate. Done it deliberate.
Oh, done it deliberate then.
Done it deliberate.
Done it deliberate. Yep.
Blew up the engine. Done it deliberate.
So how'd you do it?
Done it deliberate.
I don't give a shit.
Point out. There you go. You could be following any one of the subsequent quotes with the Fred Thompson quote.
I know. Like how this one right here. How about?
We'll bring out the moonshine, start telling lies, and calling up the women.
I don't give a shit.
All right.
See? We're just going to remake a whole new movie with just these quotes.
All right. Real racer interview. So here's, I don't know which guy this is, but it's one of those actual racers trying to pretend like he's in a movie. So here you go.
You know, a lot of guys don't like him, and it's just a situation where the guy's got a lot of talent, and he's wide open. He doesn't think about anything else. He just wants to win. I like that.
I like that.
That gives me comfort.
I'll tell you what, that gives me comfort.
Yeah, that guy's great. This should have been the title of the movie.
Son of a bitch is on my ass!
That should have been the name of it. That was Carrie. That was all the Elvis you're going to get.
Yes. Oh, the great revenge. It's like the, can I buzz the tower?
Yep.
No, yeah. Maverick, don't buzz the tower.
And then this final clip, when Tom Cruise is about to go over the finish line and win the Daytona 500, this line happens. Whoops, right here.
Help, it's happening.
All right, there you go. All right.
What?
Follow that with the Fred Thompson line.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't give no... I can't find it now. I got to have it more.
I don't give a shit.
All right, fine. Hey, Fred Thompson, I can't find your clip.
I don't give a shit.
All right, great. Let's get to the checklist. Sweet 1990 mullets, check. Everyone ever in this movie, ever, check. And John C. Reilly in his greatest role ever, check.
Can't believe you mentioned the montage, check.
Was there a montage?
Car making montage.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Totally was.
There were actually three montages. There was early racing, car making, and then a later racing montage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Never have enough of those.
Then sex montages.
And I just can't. I can't give you John C. Reilly in his best movie. His best movie was Talladega Nights for sure.
You think so? I think Step Brothers is better.
Step Brothers is a better, a funnier movie. But for him, his role in Talladega Nights is spectacular.
I say Magnolia beats all those hands down.
Yeah,
I'm with Magnolia.
Yeah, I'm with Brian. I'm with
he's the cop who loses his gun while he's trying while he's chasing a perp. Right.
I'm with you, dude. He was great in that.
I forgot about that. That was also Tom Cruise's vehicle.
No, yeah, it was. Well, he I was think in
that's
it.
The only time you get him and what's his face that just passed away. We mentioned him earlier in the show.
Philip Seymour Hoffman
in the same movie.
That movie, just for fun, listen to just the first page of cast. Julianna Moore, William H. Macy, John C. Reilly, Tom Cruise, Philip Baker Hall, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Jason Robards, Alfred Molina, Merlora Walters, don't know her, Michael Bowen, Ricky Jay. I'm running out of people
Ricky
I know. Oh, Luis Guzman.
Is in that movie. Yep.
Yeah, that is.
There's more.
I think Thomas Anderson, he has another middle name, says, I always hire Luis Guzman, but it's so long he doesn't use it.
Magnolia also has Felicity Huffman, Patton Oswalt. There's another.
Oh, really?
Thomas Jane is in that movie.
it's crazy. It's an insane film.
Yeah. Overlooked. Forgotten. Easily forgotten.
I think people have it in high. I think it's highly esteemed. Oh, I just think it's not mainstream.
And,
that's
and
all.
We'll never watch Paul Thomas Anderson on film set because his movies are all 10 hours long.
Yeah.
That's the reason why I can't watch that movie again.
But we'll watch Paul W.S. Anderson movies all day long.
right, till the cows
totally
come.
Completely different Paul Anderson.
Not a problem. All right, Star Trek stuff. There are no actors in common between this movie and anything in Star Trek, according to Daryl. However, there are 50 other behind-the-scenes people, holy mostly cow. Stunt people, who have worked on both. Also, prop maker Cliff Berman also worked on the sets of Star Trek 6 and 10. So there you go. Between 6 and 10, they had a real falling out.
I'm surprised that you just said this movie stars everybody ever.
Yeah. But
somehow,
no Trek
it
actors.
Missed everybody who'd ever worked in Star Trek. I wonder if that's
a how is it that Fred fact. Thompson is not in Star Trek?
I don't give a shit.
All right, great. That's why. Explains it. Soundtrack great. I give it a WHZ for weird for Hans Zimmer, in my opinion. I think it's just odd sounding, but whatever.
It bounced back and forth between modern rock of the 90s. Actually, it was kind of like more like late 80s.
Yeah.
White Snake kind of stuff.
Well, that's when it was made, so.
Right. To that soundtrack, which it just kept bouncing back.
That final song, who is that at the end? It was very hair band.
That is White Snake.
Is that White Snake?
That's the lead singer of White Snake, right?
Was it Great White? Was it White Snake? Was it Warrant? Was it any of those damn stupid effing bands?
Yeah, Coverdale. Yeah.
All right, fine. Alternate titles just handed to me. Look at this. This paper I have in my hand has the alternate titles and is not the rule card for a Trivial Pursuit World of Warcraft edition. They are this. Even a smart, independent nurse can't resist the wiles of Tom Cruise. That was too long, so they went with Days of Thunder. And then also, we need a crusty old dude called Robert Duvall. Hey, emails, everybody. We got emails. Barbara.
What about our Twitter posts?
Oh, how did I skip over that? I'm a giant idiot. Before we do that, before we do email.
That was my Twitter post, too.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
Before we do any of that, let's get to the Twitter post. It's 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Days of Thunder. Retarded driver gets into rivalry with even more retarded driver, almost die together, then team up to take on and defeat the Dread Pirate Roberts, all while rescuing the doctor from Roadhouse with sex. Two thumbs way up Tom Cruise's huge nose.
I don't give a shit.
All right.
Can you use the R word?
What? What's the R word? Oh, retarded?
I just did.
I think
for a while you couldn't.
It's swinging then, back a little bit.
Then you can now?
Well, you used it earlier today, so even if you can't,
you
did.
I know, but I slipped. I didn't say it twice in the Twitter post.
This movie is actually about a mentally handicapped Tom Cruise character who gets into a wreck with his rival who is also mentally handicapped, and they become more stupid as a result of their concussion. It's like this.
Rain Man is him taking care of him later on? Is that what that's all about?
Yes, that's exactly right. Exactly right.
It's a trilogy. It goes Tom, Top Gun, then Days of Thunder, then Rain Man.
Perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. All right. It is now Dunaway's turn.
Days of Thunder, like dropping the hammer in lap 5 of 500 lap race. You still got an hour and a half, you big dummy.
Oh, man, I guess.
Also, can I just say,
I'm going to drop the hammer. Don't drop the hammer.
I enjoyed the movie, but I want to say this about it. That last bit where Tom Cruise wins, gets out, it's all celebratory, and then he sees poor, sulking Robert Duvall over in the corner. That is the dumbest ending we've seen in a very long time.
It's so unnecessary and didn't even make sense.
I hate it.
You know
it.
Why, don't you? Because they didn't actually film him crossing the finish line, Tom Cruise, originally. They finished the whole movie and said, oops, guess what? We didn't finish him crossing the finish line.
Did they really? Is this true?
Yes, in the trivia.
Oh, well, it
really?
Must be true. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know what they did. That's part of the trivia.
Take your word for it. Finally, Ebert.
Days of Thunder, less fun than watching a monkey F a football.
Yes, definitely.
I'm
less.
Keeping that one,
can I,
too.
Can I get a soundboard?
Yeah, you want to hear that one again? Because that one's the one that'll keep on giving.
We end up looking like a monkey f***ing a football.
I don't give a shit.
All right. let's see. Emails now. Email time. Chad wrote in from Santa Barbara. He's a Californian, which means he's nothing.
No, he's like nobody. Nothing.
Yeah. So glad film buffs like you guys are also against the smoothing effect on new TVs. I thought it was one of the few left turning that set that setting off. I was one of the few left turning that setting off. It's a hard sentence. That being said, I did revisit the Bourne trilogy on Blu-ray. And I have to say, if you're watching a straight up Blu-ray, they do look really good. And I can straight up Blu-ray. It's a weird thing to say. And I can like see it. Making an effort to get used to it on that format for things like Netflix and Hulu. It really just seems to take you out of what you're watching. Thanks and love the show, Chad. Mm-hmm. I've tried Blu-rays. I still think it takes me out. It just feels like it's being filmed with a daytime soap opera camera.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. This is what like we were really worried about. This is what we were really worried about with the Hobbit movies, right? Is that before the first one came out, we'd heard that it was using this new multi-frame
60 frames per second, yeah.
Yeah, and we're thinking, oh my God, it's going to look like like Blu-ray, like new TV smoothing.
And it did, because somebody had shown me 60 frame per second footage.
Oh, really?
And I went, I don't want to see it that way, because that looks really bad to me.
You know, but it's kind of like 3D. When you first see 3D, until your brain adjusts to the fact that you're supposed to be watching 3D, it doesn't bother me as much as I think it bothers you.
Yeah, but see, that's the problem I have with 3D, is I never did. I mean, it's not... Can I live with it? Can I survive? Yes. It's not like, I can't live with a future where maybe this is what we do. My problem with it is I feel like there's magic in filmmaking, and this makes it more real, which makes it seem cheaper to me and not magic.
Well, I mean, when we film, I have a film friend who does stuff, and his camera actually has a 24 frames per second mode. So it gives it that film look. And we grew up seeing it like that, and that's what we appreciate, and that's what we like.
Sure. Yeah, and you're right, though. So, a kid being born today, if all he sees is, 60 frames per second or greater, thing. Then they'll be fine.
I got to give it to Peter Jackson. He said, when you come in and watch 48 frames per second, you're going to go, what? And then you're going to get used to it, and you're going to like it. And that's exactly what happens. I've never talked to anybody who, at the end of the Hobbit movies, is like, oh,
I have
that frame rate.
I have talked to people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there are people who will say they will never do that again, and they will never trust another Peter Jackson idea again.
So, and these are people who went King in. Kong? They went into this thinking it was going to be horrible, and so they just waited for it to be, horrible kind of thing. They looked for, because I didn't even notice it. I remember hearing about it. I forgot about it, and it wasn't until recently that I thought about, he was doing that whole.
Did you see it though? Like,
in theaters, sure.
And you didn't mind it. You liked it.
At all. I didn't even notice it. To be honest,
I probably would be fine, like you guys are fine in that scenario. And maybe if you produce it enough, I don't know, just try it with The Walking Dead, and it looks like somebody made that next door. It just,
No. I don't want that smoothing thing on. No. I'm just saying, like, for the Hobbit movies, I didn't notice it. But if it's on a TV, I notice it.
Yeah.
Instantly.
Because you also had
blurry,
but you also had like it was like IMAX and stuff for that for the Hobbit deal.
We saw it at it was a large screen theater, but wasn't IMAX.
Oh, okay, well there you go.
As opposed to small screen theaters that would be like.
Well, it wasn't like
your buddy's house.
It wasn't like a small multiplex. It was like a decent sized screen. But
right. Like they have some that are not officially. They can't call themselves IMAX because that costs money or whatever, but they can be as big and basically copy the format and just do it. Yeah,
exactly.
I think that's how I saw Batman Begin. No, the other one, the second one, Dark Knight. Batman.
Actually, I feel like we're far afield of Days of Thunder here, because I was bothered by 24 frames per second being a little jittery when it comes to these long shots of cars moving really fast. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. There are in panning shots, and I don't. And again, maybe this is more of a streaming problem and how they handle frame rates and things and fill rates and all that stuff. But you're right. There is like a long, slow shot of even just like an outdoor, like the color purple, and we're gonna span across the valley and come over to the porch. There is something that's kind of like, all right, stop doing that. You're making me.
I'm watching a Netflix transfer on a computer, and I'm actually wishing, you know, Days of Thunder might look better on my 120 hertz television with some motion blur turned on.
Oh, good Lord. Don't do
I
it.
I actually
don't
watched it.
It
on, I recorded it a few weeks ago on HDNet. So I didn't actually watch the Netflix version. Mm.
The next flicks. I like that.
The next flicks. The next flicks.
Competitor and see if people come over to you because I think they heard that. Nicole Gross wrote in. She says this, at Randy's request, I would like to keep the conversation going. Oh boy, wait to hear this.
Right.
Oh boy.
This
oh
is
boy.
About Minority Report. It says, I completely agree with Dunaway on this. I hate that movie. I have had this weird thing with movies where I cannot watch anything to do with dead bodies floating underwater.
Well, that's a different problem than the movie being bad.
And these are live bodies floating at the top of the water.
Hey, I'll take what I can get. I'm going to call it valid.
Okay. Well, it says also, it says anything with underwater, spiders, and or things being done to people's eyes. Wow. That is a three-peat in this movie for sure. Given the 35-year-old nightmares, or gives this 35-year-old nightmares. Needless to say, I spent the entire time in the theater with my hands over my eyes. I remember something about a train going down the side of a building. thinking that was stupid, and that's about
that
all.
That was stupid.
Especially because it wasn't a train. But anyway.
It was a car,
but that
and it
doesn't
was still
make
stupid.
It a bad movie. No. Okay, there are things that I don't like seeing in film, and there was something really disturbs me this day is that thought of the first Twin Peaks where they pull a chunk of newspaper out from under the dead girl's fingernail. And that's like still thinking about that.
Yeah,
but that doesn't make it bad. That makes us like, okay, yeah, you used a piece of, you know, use something that disturbs me visually, but it doesn't make the film bad.
Wrapped in plastic.
Exactly.
it's interesting to think of that whole one issue, one scene thing for some people. Like we talked about when we watched Wrath of Khan, how the whole putting the big huge earwigs in the guy's ears was so grotesque. You could imagine somebody seeing that and it ruins the whole film, all of it.
Yeah.
This is a bad movie because you grossed me out.
Yeah. I remember as a kid hating that one. Now I think it's the best one, but at the time I was like, ugh, I can't watch that again. That
been
thing where you put the earwig.
Neck pinches?
Oh, yeah.
Horse neck pinches?
I don't make any of that. That's what bad movies do to people. Like Carter can't watch zombie movies because one scene in Zombieland freaked her out. She can't
really?
Do it now. Yeah.
What's the scene? What's the scene?
I don't remember.
Is it when they kill Bill Murray?
Because
that freaked me out.
I think it was, I don't remember.
That
something
just made me sad.
Something. Oh, spoiler, everybody, if you haven't seen that movie.
Oh, have you ever seen Zombieland from what, 2008? Oh, my God.
We can't help you.
If you're listening to a Frog Pants podcast and you care about spoilers, sorry.
Well, hold on. We're going to call. Let's get on the line. Hold on a second. We're going to give a famed television runner, Vince Gilligan, a call real quick here. Let me get the call handy. Hold on a second. All right, here we go. Mr. Gilligan, you on the line there?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, we've got a problem. We need to clear something up. There's a question has arisen again. I know this keeps coming up, but how long until something is considered not a spoiler anymore?
Well, hold on a second. My phone wasn't working. You kind of heard me without a phone for a second there. So... The approved amount for spoilers is 2 weeks.
Oh,
nice.
Oh, well, then that's all cleared up. All right,
okay. You guys are completely in the clear, and I'll be sending some gift baskets and some turtles with people's heads taped to the top of them.
Perfect.
I have a question.
Oh, bro, he's got a progression from Mr. Gilligan. Go ahead,
Gilligan, real quick. Do you hate brown people as much as Breaking Bad would leave us to believe?
The connection is getting pretty bad here.
We're losing him.
Spilled on the phone.
We've lost him. Well, it's all right. It's mint julep. It's always trouble. All right. Well, whenever you guys need to understand about how spoilers work, we'll give that guy a call.
I could see his big black glasses and his mustache and goatee.
His sweet little goat. I know. I could see it too. It's uncanny. Our next film, by the way, is not a film. It is an episode of The A-Team. It is called Cowboy George, and it is a live viewing of that, a commentary track, something you guys like and always ask for more of, and part of it's because we're all traveling coming up in the next week, and it's not going to happen otherwise, so we're going to do this. So watch for that. That's next week, the A-Team episode, streaming on Netflix, by the way.
What? Season... And Hulu?
What's the... Yeah, but Hulu sucks.
Yeah, don't use Hulu because things won't match up.
Yeah,
that's true.
Things won't match up. Commercials will pop in for no reason, and they'll think you're blocking it and give you a 50-minute sit there and look at a black screen while we punish you for something you didn't
do. Warning, yes.
You're freaking punished. Dicks. A-Team, yeah, it's all on Netflix, though. And what do we know what season and episode that is? We don't know, do we?
Season 4, episode 23,
I want to say.
All right, watch for that.
One of the last good ones before we get into season 5, where they go to freaking Vietnam again.
I have watched every episode of the A-Team up to this one. I'm excited to watch this one with you guys.
I kind of am, too.
I've always heard the fifth season you don't watch, and so I actually stopped right before this one, and let's do it.
Well, our plan.
Are you guys ready for confession time?
Yeah, confession.
First A-Team.
Get out of here.
Did you watch any television as a kid? What did you watch?
I watched so much. I felt like I watched so much damn television, but I never watched the A-Team. I don't know why.
So no A-Team,
no Dukes of Hazzard.
You never saw, was it Knight Rider you never saw, or you saw plenty of Knight Rider? I can't remember.
I never saw a single episode of Knight Rider.
Oh, that is insane.
Someone very influential to me. Convinced me that all three of those shows were horrible, and
I think my spleen just fell out of my ass.
they were horrible, but that's what we want.
All right, hold on. Let's just try one more test here. Did you watch any Magnum PI?
Go Ibbit.
No.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
This is incredible. The funny thing is, it's not like you're a trivia man. Like tonight, you're even leaving to another trivia thing.
Right, right.
Like you know your stuff.
I know your weakness. As soon as I'm going to be asking all kinds of A-Team questions.
Wow, all right. Well,
I know who's in the A-Team. I mean, I know about the A-Team. I know their band. And
yeah, but someone said to you, if someone said to you, who's the actress who was not there after the pilot, you'd never know.
You'd
never know. Man, this is good stuff. Next week, we'll stump him on more TV shows he hasn't seen. Until then, please visit us at our website, filmsack.com. That's a place you can go. Please do. We'd love it there. Filmsack@gmail.com is our email address. We love your emails. Please keep those coming. You can find us on Twitter @FilmSack. And while you're at it, leave us a review on Stitcher, on iTunes, or wherever podcasts are distributed. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Ooh.
We'll see you next time.
I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.